The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Today's Talking Simpsons is brought to you by TaxAct, the best deal in tax. With free federal and state simple returns and affordable pricing on other services, your maximum refund is guaranteed. And listeners of this show can go to trytaxact.com/lasertime and get 15% off federal and state filings.
Ahoy hoy everybody, and welcome to Talking Simpsons. This is the Laser Time Podcast Network's chronological exploration of the Simpsons, and today's episode is all about Mr. Lisa Goes to Washington. Before we get to that, though, I am Bob Mackey, your host. Who else is here today?
Third-party candidate, Henry Gilbert.
Human cesspool, Chris Antista.
A wealthy gadabout, Dave Rudden.
And I am skincare consultant Mackey. And today, yes, we're talking about Mr. Lisa Goes to Washington. It aired on September 26, 1991. Chris, tell us what happened on this magical day in history.
This week in Simpsons history, PBS debuts what may very well be television's most successful video game adaptation. Still the current NFL record holder for most wins, Coach Don Shula wins his 300th victory with Miami Dolphins, and Dr. Seuss and Miles Davis are dead.
Was there a behind the music about Rockapella?
Yeah.
I see just heroin overdoses left and right for these guys.
This is Carmen Sandiego.
It is Carmen Sandiego.
I believe they did a public appearance at some game convention and sang this recently. I believe I read that.
Is that the most long-running, most successful, most unanimously praised video game adaptation of anything?
I love that. I watched that fanatically after school every day.
Oh, me too. Yeah, and it might have taught me something. I think
it was one of the few
not geography.
It was one of the few things that could get me to not watch Disney Afternoon. I was like, F Disney Afternoon. Time for Carmen.
This is a bad goof troop.
When you had Carmen Sandiego and Ghost Rider back-to-back, that was like sticking to PBS for a while, man.
That is writer millenniums.
Writer millennials. So if you like Reader's Digest parodies, get ready for this episode, everybody. Woo!
Man, this is... In terms of like the shell of the episode, this does feel fucking old. Like Reader's Digest still around?
It is still around
in multiple countries. Yes, I looked it up on Wikipedia.
Me too, because I was sure it had to be out of print.
It feels very much like a periodical from the early part of the 20th century, in that there are really not a lot of pictures. It's pure text, story, sometimes like serialized narratives, things like that.
It predates the Third Reich. It's been around that long.
1922.
Like, they don't have those stands where you put them. Like they would always be at where I saw them was at super. Markets
where the
right
Archie
next,
Digest
Archie
be,
Digest yeah TV guides before they got regular sized, like those were all in those little area, and that's where you
I don't
would
believe
get,
I've but, ever read one.
So this is a very political episode. It's written by George Meyer, one of the few he's the credited writer on. We talked about him before, but he is one of the most important writers in the writing room. He's has one of the smartest and darkest senses of humor in the room, and he's married to Simpson writer John Beattie's sister also.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, but this is totally his type of myopic view on politics, which 1,000% informed my view on politics, too. Like, this is maybe it just awakened something in me that I am a very cynically political person. Obama is one of the very rare candidates in 2008 that gave me hope ever in something.
But this does have two outlooks. But I think too tight a bow on a joke.
Exactly.
In the episode as fast as possible. We'll get to that. Homer fails to cash a million dollar check.
I love that checks don't have exclamation points.
Yes.
I had a feeling it was too good to be true. Every time you get $1 million, something queers the deal.
I don't think real checks have exclamation points.
Well, at least we got a free sample of Reading Digest.
Marge, I never read a magazine in my life, and I'm not going to start now. Hey, a cartoon.
Well, dear, you always wanted a compact. Ain't it the truth?
No, it's not the truth, Homer. It's well documented that women are safer drivers than men.
Oh, Marge, cartoons don't have any deep meaning. They're just stupid drawings that give you a cheap laugh.
And you see a butt crack.
You see a giant butt crack.
I definitely did the Bart point and laugh when that butt crack was on as a kid. As a kid, I did.
So this is the first episode of the third season's production run. You can tell how fast the pacing is getting because in the first like couple seconds, Homer gets that Publisher's Clearinghouse letter. It cuts right to the bank.
Yeah.
Him talking to the teller cuts back home. Like they are moving the pacing so fast. You can just cut to a bank for a joke now. Sorry,
that David. Teller, by the way, has a very comic book guy voice.
Yeah. I noticed that too.
Void. But you know whose voice isn't correct? Once for the second time, I think ever.
Who?
Troy McClure. This is a special Troy McClure. Not just because it's again Dan Castellaneta doing it, who did it for a one-off joke in Bart Stoggins.
Yeah, at least you don't see him. It's only coming out of the television.
But it's also one of the very rare times where it is a one movie Troy McClure joke. It is just Preacher with a Shovel. No second movie is named.
Mm. We now return to Troy McClure and Dolores Montenegro in Preacher with a Shovel.
But irrigation can save your people, Chief Smiling Bear.
Marge, look at them staring at that idiot box. God forbid they would ever read something and improve their minds.
You've certainly taken a shine to that magazine.
It's not just one magazine, Marge. They take hundreds of magazines.
I don't know what Reader's Digest is or what it does. I thought you would submit a bunch of essays,
basically.
But it's not like...
there's the Reader's Digest version of something, which meant that they got like books or chapters of books or also long-form stories that they would then shorten down into the Reader's Digest version.
I don't know, man.
That would be like 5 pages long or something.
This was an old joke in 1991.
Mm-hmm. But it was just It was a very like centrist periodical. Like it would sometimes have news stuff. Like I think they had very well observed Reader's Digest jokes. Should we worry about Bermuda is one of the headlines, which is
meet Mr. Soybean.
Dr. Soybean.
Oh, Dr. Soybean.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, he did go to college.
Though I wish Lisa had said to Homer when he said, "Hey, we're gonna read something, not watch TV." Lisa should have said, "I've read 18 times the books you have, Homer."
This is what kicks off the episode. An ad in the Reader's Reading Digest magazine.
Right.
Where do you think? This baby never steers you wrong. And it was free. Free!
Free certainly has enriched our lives.
Wow. Win a trip to Washington, D.C. All expenses paid. VIP tour. Oh, it's for kids.
Wait, Dad. an essay contest. Children under 12, 300 words. Fiercely pro-American. Sounds interesting.
Bart? Maybe this is something you'd like to do, too.
Mom, it's a nice thought, but we both know that this is the pony to bet on.
Love it.
Yeah. I definitely more had Bart's thing of like, I don't need to.
He's skirting responsibility, but it's still a vote of confidence for Lisa. That's rare from Bart.
Yeah. That was an attitude I took a lot when my parents were like, your brother's going to basketball practice. Do you want to go too? No, I'm not
television.
Yeah.
That also feels like a first that is the Homer joke of, I'm done with this, throw in the garbage, that would later turn into throw into the fire.
Fire, yeah. But, the books will burn in the future.
There were, by the way, some great gags leading up to, like, Homer utilizing it in many ways, including my favorite line in the episode, when he's in bed with Marge. He looks up how to please your lover, and he says, "You have a nice body, and if you'd like to see me in a costume, you need only ask."
That
is a great line.
They're experimenting with furryism this early in their relationship.
I also liked where he's reading the story that this is something that too informed me as a kid, which was, it was when he's telling the story of the merciless flake of the sea lion. Homer, he obviously got out alive if he wrote the article. Don't be so... Oh, you're right.
Him quoting Tolstoy. Give me learning, sir. You may keep your black bread.
I love Marge's. This is one of the most famous lines of the Simpsons period that I keep seeing all over Facebook. Is Grandpa Simpson? I'm not with it anymore. but like this is a good one from Marge too.
Think of a better opening.
How's it going, honey?
Not very well.
Well, when I used to get stuck like this, I'd go for a bike ride. Do kids go on bike rides anymore?
Yes.
I don't know. I thought maybe bikes weren't cool anymore. Do kids still use that word? Cool?
Yes, Mom.
I think I've muttered out loud if both of those were the case at 35.
I like when Marge is sweetly dorky. She's just so out of it, but it's cute. Yeah.
It's nice when they can find jokes like that for Marge. They don't often do. And I did like the Burns' just reaction of his job description clearly specifies an illiterate.
Thank you, President Ford.
Thank you, President Ford.
My favorite thing in here now is awful essay cliches. If anybody Bob and I were English majors.
Oh
right?
My God, so no, I was an English major too, and this is like this totally spoke to me as a kid. In elementary school, I had an immediate knack for math. Like I felt like such a special gifted kid because kids were dealing with subtraction problems, and I just remember this magical moment in first grade where they put up like, okay, everybody, this entire like hour is do all these 20 problems on the blackboard, and I was like, done. I just did it all, and the teacher was so impressed, and I think that her being impressed with me just ruined me for life, because I was like, see, little effort, and everybody loves me.
I don't know if I said this in the show before. I'm pretty sure I have. I resent my parents for giving me workbooks before I ever went to school. I go there immediately, and I finish everything fast. I'm reading in kindergarten before anybody else.
Mm-hmm. I had the same thing, yeah, and you just were bored.
Yes.
You were just so bored.
They call it ADD, but like I really got used to like, This girl is going to spend 4 minutes poring over this Buffy and Max sentence. Mm.
Today,
I will disappear into my imagination and not bother anybody because that's how school was for me the first five. It wasn't until like sixth grade where like, oh, you're supposed to try at this. Mm-hmm. You actually have to read stuff.
I don't know if it's like that anymore, but the education system is garbage for anybody who isn't the middle of the road. Like, it's a factory. But anyway.
No, I was not smart. I memorized things early. I got an advanced leap.
Mr. Bergstrom agrees with you, Henry.
Yeah. By middle school, though, that's when I started having trouble with geometry and at the same time realized I really liked writing arguments and essays. And it born in me a love of writing essays that got me into, you know, advanced English and then gifted English and then AP English and into college and then into a job, which basically was writing essays in the Ames Press.
This episode is rife with Kennedy-esque patriotic essays from children.
Yeah.
And Nelson's essay,
burn the flag if you must. But before you do, you better burn a few other things. You better burn your shirt and your pants. Be sure to burn your TV and car. Oh, yes, and don't forget to burn your house, because none of those things could exist without 6 white stripes, 7 red stripes, and a hell of a lot of stars. Yeah! Thank you very much.
Yeah, damn right.
It's like I'm at a Trump rally.
Yeah, Nelson gets a 10 in jingoism. That was one of the categories.
I know. I hate that every asshole at a podium now just automatically conjures Trump imagery in my face. But let me just blow through these essay cliches, because I love all of them.
They are all perfect.
And it's all done throughout a montage. Yeah. Going throughout the country.
Recipe for a free country. Mix 1 cup liberty with 3 teaspoons of justice. Add 1 informed electorate. Baste well with veto power.
The recipe cliche, I believe we have.
My back is spineless. My belly is yellow. I am the American non-voter.
You hear that,
apologize,
Chris?
Not apologizing. Not apologizing.
What's that hick from Alabama know?
Yeah, but this is the absolute best one.
Yes.
The kid from Queens with Hank Azaria's voice.
Ding, dong, the sounds of the Liberty Bell. Ding, freedom. Dong, opportunity. Ding, excellent schools. Dong, quality hospitals.
Ding.
That it?
Dong.
That is very much like the tough kid learning poetry.
My line of the show is, we the purple? What the hell was
that? I have a bit of that because like Lisa wins the essay contest and they have to cross-check it to make sure her father...
They have to make sure Homer didn't write it.
Your parents must have written it.
Homer is stupider in this episode than he'd been up to that
point.
But
that's the weird thing is that he's both all the time. He's getting smarter and reading more, and then he's stupid. Then he's reading more again, and then he's stupid again.
We the purple? What the hell was that?
Are you a professional writer?
Mm-mm.
Are you interested in politics or government?
Mm-mm.
Are you interested in anything?
Mm-mm.
Could you touch your nose for me?
Mm-mm.
Lisa, after meeting your father, I've decided to award you an additional 5 points. Congratulations. You and your family are going to Washington.
Woohoo! Who would have guessed reading and writing would pay off?
I tightened up that clip, and I've never been able to take credit for this. I actually made that joke better, because that scene is so weird and long.
Yeah.
It had a lot of breaks, but I like her disillusionment at Homer not being able to touch his nose of like, oh my God.
Yeah, Lisa got 5 extra points for that after she met Homer.
But the staging of his like, I had to get a lot of silences. Like, this is the worst joke I've seen. Actually, it looks like something else should have been here.
Also, like, he just completely loses the ability to speak for like a
minute. It seems like it's supposed to be from across the room, but you still hear her perfectly.
Yeah,
something went wrong there.
Also, this is a very personal story, but when I recorded this, I remember the pain of recording this because I paused it wrong. When we got to that joke there, to pause it for the commercial. On the playback, it was always, who would have thought reading and writing would pay? And then we just cut into immediately the next scene.
What did he say?
And it just hurt me forever. I'm like, oh, it ruined
as far
it.
As tapes, the only reason I captured the next clip was because I would tape The Simpsons at this point every single Thursday and watch them every day throughout the week. And occasionally you'd get like the first commercial break usually would have next time on The Simpsons, and this was the clip from Stark Raving Dad.
Would you like to see where we hang our coats?
No, thank you. I'd rather push this button.
No.
We're all gonna die!
So the line, "We're all gonna die," sticks out in my head, but then the people screaming as the plane slowly and safely descends is one of my favorite parts of the episode.
That is pretty great. But again, this is pre-9/11 flying. That's what it was like, kids.
Still back then, they had no leg room because Bart's just like banging his chair
that's what
backwards.
I wrote down. It's the first laptop I ever saw on the Simpsons.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen one for 10 years.
In 1991, wow.
It was like a Lane laptop from Seinfeld, like where it's just like, this is huge.
Giant IBM logo on it.
So their tour of Washington, D.C., it is a classic and an early Simpsons go someplace. Yeah. And let's see them see stuff. But
4th Street and D.
Look, Homer, the IRS.
Oh, boo yourself.
Remember to do your taxes, kid.
I miss not knowing what the IRS was.
And if there's still time, try taxact.com/lasertime, people.
I agree.
15% off your federal and state.
Before we leave the plane and we have left, but I have to go back to it for my insane conspiracy theory. So, follow me with this.
Please.
We find out in season 6, Marge cannot fly.
Yes.
She's deathly afraid of flying because her dad was a steward and she couldn't handle that. Also, she was gunned down like in North by Northwest and several other things happened to her.
So, Miss Lowenstein.
Yes. I thought
her
it was
name
Weiss.
Is
Weiss. Yeah. Anyhow, I was like, okay, Marge is going to be on this plane, and then I'll get mad because it's inconsistent. Marge is not on the plane. You
She's
never
not
see
seen
her.
On the plane.
You don't see her sitting. Like Homer's there. You see Homer. You should see Marge's hair and her sitting next to him.
So that's. But you see, you're saying the Simpsons have plausible deniability. That
yes.
She wasn't. Yeah. That she John Maddened herself throughout.
My theory is Marge left earlier and took a train, and we don't find out about that.
She could also have been drugged.
That too,
and just hiding in the bathroom, drugged the whole time.
She's like the B.A. Baracus of The Simpsons.
I bet we'll see another flight before that episode, though. Mm-hmm. I bet.
I don't think so.
I'll poke holes in this somehow.
Okay. We'll find out.
And them going to the Watergate as a kid, I didn't know what the Watergate was. I didn't know that was a joke.
I expected like a Watergate joke. But it's like, look, we're at the Watergate, so
we are simply
this
in the Watergate.
A first for Homer and the blank goes on, blank goes off.
Yeah, that's exactly how I wrote it, too, in my notes. Yeah. Blank goes on, blank goes off.
Look, they give you a shower cap and body gel and bathrobes. Oh, and a welcoming mint on your pillow.
Wow, a shoehorn, just like in a movie. Suit goes on, suit goes off. Suit goes on, suit goes off. Suit goes on.
Homer, name me more than one movie with a shoehorn in it.
Well, they're just very impressed by such pedestrian things like a hotel room.
Yeah, that's a great joke that they're such simple people.
Like a shower cap.
Which Marge couldn't even fit that on her head, which I feel like is another joke. Did you guys, as kids, on vacations, like, did you fight over beds with your brother or sister?
Yes, but also, like, hotel beds were, like, the closest thing we had to, like, those inflatable, those trampoline houses you fucking kids have now. Like, just jumping back and forth, creating pillow forts.
Oh,
we loved hotel rooms.
This episode definitely did affect me in a negative way, where I would do the elevator prank that Bart did a lot.
I think I learned from this.
I think it did teach a generation of kids how to be dicks, like little dicks.
Yeah, but the whole time denying that was actually happening. But then Homer is now stupid again after being smart early in the episode, but still a Reader's Digest fan, and I love him meeting the editor.
Oh, yeah.
I'm Faith Crowley, patriotism editor of Reading Digest.
Oh, I love your magazine. My favorite section is how to increase your word power. That thing is really, really, really good.
There's a very Yes, Mr. Thompson thing in this episode that I love.
Well, the VIP thing, too.
What I was mentioning.
These are special VIP badges. They'll get you into places other tourists never see.
Miss, what does the I stand for?
Important.
Ooh, how about the V?
Very.
Oh, and Miss, just one more question.
Person.
What does the I stand for again?
You cut like two seconds of silence there too. Like that's how much longer. Like that's how dumb he is. That's why I said he is really stupid.
You know what I cut out
world.
In all these clips? Maggie suckling.
Yeah,
it's always used to like put emphasis or on silence on a joke. It's Maggie suckling.
Oh,
and
wow,
I hate it now. I fucking hate it after doing 40 episodes of this show. I can't stand Maggie suckling.
Oh, and,
the cooler joke that I want to mention is in the background is brevity ellipses wit and like that's
brevity is dot 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 wit. That is another very specific joke about Reader's Digest editing down things.
Yeah. It's a Hamlet line. Brevity is the soul of wit or something like that, and they just. That was too much. Yep. Too much to pay for.
So perfect. When I went to Washington, D.C., which I think was 99 or 2000, I was still in high school and it was pre-9/11, but I remember seeing the Spirit of St. Louis and immediately thinking of this joke from this thing.
Yeah.
I never got to see the bowling alley where Richard Nixon bowled back-to-back 300 games.
Also, Margaret was surprisingly horny in this episode. She wanted to snuggle before, and then when they went to the Washington Monument...
I did not get that boner joke for a long time.
Yeah, like, Marge, grow up.
The Simpsons will be right back.
Oh, look, Homer. The IRS.
Boo! I know, Homer. Taxes aren't fun, but they are mandatory and we all have to do them. So thank goodness today's Talking Simpsons is brought to you by Tax Act. The best deal in online taxes, baby. In case you don't know, Tax Act offers free federal and simple state returns and affordable pricing on all their other online services. I do all my taxes online. I recommend you do too if you're a Laser Time listener. Know that I do not recommend going to franchise accounting places with your own 2 feet. Always do your taxes online to get the best deal. And listeners, yes, you can get 15% off federal and state tax filings specifically by going to trytaxact.com/lasertime. That's tax. You know how to spell tax. Act as in acting. Thank you. In case you don't know, Tax Act is a leading provider of affordable digital and download tax preparation solutions for individuals, business owners, and tax professionals. Tax Act makes preparing and filing your taxes easy, affordable, and quick, and you'll get your maximum refund, baby. So a little less taboo at Homer. And of course, once again, you listeners can go to trytaxact.com/lasertime and get 15% off your state and federal filings. Thank you, Tax Act, for reminding us we are running out of time to do our taxes.
Then when she meets the senator, he is actually a representative, not a senator.
I love that it's... I was going to play this real fast. It's the first ever appearance of Barbara Bush.
President's
not the
bathroom.
Last.
Do you mind?
Barbara Bush!
You have those damn badges. Okay. This tub was installed in 1894.
And they're both still alive. Barbara actually was in the news recently in very sad scenes of her sitting next to Jeb in interviews of just like, my son should be president. It was just...
And speaking of Jeb. He was at a recent rally.
Yeah, he looks sad.
All of our families are supposed to be president.
H.W. Bush looked real sad.
Speaking of Jeb and Barbara, it was a very much like a Skinner and Agnes Skinner joke. I kept seeing the picture of him and his mom and Skinner and Mrs. Skinner together. But funny story, there was like a weird little feud between Barbara Bush and The Simpsons because I believe in the paper, in some newspaper or maybe
it
was a magazine.
That in our season wrap-up.
Oh. So we're going to talk about that later?
Yeah.
Okay. Listen,
subscribe
to Patreon. Yeah. You'll find that. I'm going to save it for that one.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but she did. She wrote a letter to The Simpsons to tell them to stop. They wrote a letter back, and that was supposed to be the end of it. And
as then, Marge.
They had a correspondence. So this is a budding rivalry, I believe.
Yeah. Okay, so they meet the representative for whatever state Springfield is.
Congressman, this is Springfield National Forest. Now, basically, what we want to do is cut her down.
Uh-huh.
As you can see in our artist's rendition, it's full of old growth,
terrorizing animals.
In comes our logging company.
This is exactly what happens.
It's all part of nature's, cycle.
Well, Jerry, you're a whale of a lobbyist, and I'd like to give you a logging permit. I would,
but this
isn't like burying toxic waste. People are going to notice those trees are gone.
Congressman, this is where it gets awkward. I never quite know how to put this. I just want to
offer me a bribe.
I do like the Simpsons do it a lot where you just touch your nose.
Yeah, yeah. I love that. Yeah.
I cut that. But this is Grimm said it a long time ago. But that's The Simpsons is a really young age informed your cynicism.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like, insane really degree.
I love how in the after picture of the forest, it's been cleared and just stumps. The animals are all having like tea parties and playing leapfrog.
There's a rainbow.
Yeah,
it's so beautiful.
So at least it gets to meet this congressman right in the middle of his bribe. All of the everything he says is almost my line of the show. I really love you're a whale of a lobbyist.
Yeah, a whale of a lobbyist.
His name is Bob Arnold, by the way.
Yeah, Bob Arnold. And his last line here is almost my line of the show.
Lisa, you're a doer. And who knows, maybe someday you'll be a congressman or a senator. We have quite a few women senators, you know.
Only two, I check.
You're a sharp one. Well, how about a few pictures? Tot shot always plays in the sticks.
Now there are 20 female senators.
I looked it up, too. Yeah. So,
oh, really?
In case you don't know, quick civics lessons. There are 100 senators. There's two from every state.
50 states?
There's two for every state, and senators are more powerful than representatives. And at the time, there really were two. I double-checked this. There were only two female senators, and it had only ever been two up to that point. The next year, according to Wikipedia, in response to a new feminism movement, caused in part by the Clarence Thomas situation.
He got sick of drinking pubic hairs.
Two more women were elected as senators to make it four, and that's Jocelyn Burdick and Dianne Feinstein.
Oh, Feinstein, yeah.
From our own state. Currently, 20 female senators, 16 Democrats, 4 Republicans.
Hmm. By the way, right after he says this plays well in the sticks, they cut to Mo reading the newspaper and being impressed. So
if I have a vote,
both that and the scene later on suggests that in the world of The Simpsons, newspapers can be printed exceptionally quick.
Yes, a lot of things happen.
Especially at the end.
Yeah, a lot of things happen very quick at the end, Dave. Yes. It's like accelerated timelines.
Well, that is the speed of Season 3, like we talked about at the beginning.
You mean Talking Simpsons Season 3? Because we got a new clip!
I will iron your sheets when you iron out the inequities in your labor laws. Amen, sister.
I told you no one ever came here. So, Bob, where do we stand on Springfield Forest? Do I get my logging permit? Well, let me put it this way, Jerry. Timber!
So none of you watching this at the time knew Winifred Beecher Howe.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know it now either. I Googled it last night.
Yeah, I didn't know it till yesterday.
Oh, iron out your sheets when you iron out the inequities
of
your labor laws.
Yeah. She's made up. She was
it
real.
Is so funny.
I think she's based on Susan B. Anthony because she was on the 50-cent piece or the $2 coin.
But then
Winifred Beecher Howe was on the 75-cent piece. And there's a really great joke in a terrible episode where Marge tells the story of Sacagawea. And at the end, she's like, and then she was immortalized on the $1 coin. And if you go to the bank, you can trade these in for real money. So it's like, it just shows how if a woman is on a coin, it's on an unpopular currency.
That's so funny, too, because in George Meyer's last written episode was the Thanksgiving
episode.
Which was also about unfamous feminists. Yeah. Like,
I believe they were all real, though.
Yeah, they were all real. But
they were, as was Thomas Jefferson, the Jefferson
Memorial. That's one of my that's my line of the show.
Yes.
The Jefferson stuff.
Mr. Jefferson? My name is Lisa Simpson, and I have a problem.
I know your problem. The Lincoln Memorial was too crowded.
Sorry, sir. It's just...
No one ever comes to see me. I don't blame them. I never did anything important. Just the Declaration of Independence, the Louisiana Purchase, the dumbwaiter.
Maybe I should be going. I caught you at a bad time.
Wait! Please don't go. I get so lonely.
I am obsessed with the idea of a Washington, D.C. monument with an inferiority complex.
Well, it's harder to get
to than Abe, too.
Like, you want to see Abe before Jefferson.
The last time I was there, I was on the river, and I was going right by it on a nice boat, grandma's funeral.
And Abe doesn't have as complicated a history as Thomas Jefferson does.
I forgot nothing came of the scene. He just gets to be bitter for 30 seconds, and Lisa walks away.
To me, in my mind, it defined the episode, but it's such a quick scene.
And these are all like Mr. Smith Goes to Washington parodies, and I haven't seen it in maybe 15 years, so it's all very, very fuzzy.
I watch it like every 2 years.
Oh, wow. Still so true. My favorite scene is the very satisfied congressman who's just like, yeah, I did break you. You passed out reading the Constitution.
My filibuster.
Now, the best scene is when people are writing that he's a nincompoop in the newspaper, and he just a montage of Jimmy's... Every time I watch it, like, this has to be a dream sequence. But no, he goes around punching reporters.
Oh,
there's a montage of him knocking out reporters.
That's not true today.
But it is not a dream sequence. Every time he just does that.
Jimmy Stewart's punch out.
Yeah. So when Lisa envisions the Fat Cats of a New Yorker cartoon, That, again, still sticks to me to this day. I'm just like, yeah, it's just people paying each other. Like, it's just a money party. Yeah. It's not... Nobody does good in government, or it's very hard to, so...
I should mention that that is a parody or a caricature or something, a takeoff of Thomas Nast, who's one of the first political cartoonists, who died in 1903, if you want to think of how old he was.
Not the same guy from... They parodied in War of the Simpsons.
Different guy. That was Duffy, I believe. Yeah. A little bit later.
Because there was the Laughing Senators, and they looked a lot like Schoolhouse Rocks.
Yeah. Thomas Nast had way more like cross-hatching, but that's really impossible to portray on a TV.
Love that Bob was animation.
Well, I know the I'm Just a Bill does have cross-hatching type stuff on it too. It was kind of drawn in that way.
Oh my god, Lisa finally goes to give her essay to win the award, and like this character singing the deficit rag.
Yeah.
Okay. The deficit rag. Oh, yeah, the deficit rag. Those budget gaps can be a 12-digit drag. I'm telling you, that's the deficit. They really made a mess of it. That's the deficit rag. Thank you.
Yep. Bro, this guy is awful.
I know. Just sit still.
I like how that is not even like a joke out of bars. Like, this sucks.
Yes.
Like,
and Marge agrees.
Yeah. Like, and there is only one person who this could be.
It's Mark Russell. Man,
and
My mom liked Mark Russell when this was on. She was like, they're too mean to Mark Russell.
I grew up without cable, and we had five channels, and one of them was PBS. Yeah. This guy, Mark Russell, just played the piano and songs like that, the fucking deficit rag. Stars were on the side. It's such a vague memory, but I looked it up for this episode, and he had four comedy specials a year for like 30 years. He retired in 2001, and so if you're younger, you probably never saw him.
No.
I saw him like one television, three channels, like, get this the fuck off. I would see him on PBS a lot. Yeah, my parents loved it.
At first I thought this was like a Capital Steps parody, but then I looked that up and it was like, we put the mock in democracy. I'm like, go to hell. Just get out of here.
I mean, nobody made fun of them better than the Manugents on Mr. Show.
Oh, that's right. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, they're just so mean to Mark Russell. A quick thing about Mark Russell, he did retire, but he wrote a comic book for DC last year. It's this 12-issue miniseries called Prez, and it's this parody of, it's a political parody, and it's honestly was really good. Yeah. The first couple issues
I read
good.
The first issue, I think. I didn't know he wrote them.
But then I read, like, wait, this is written by that Mark Russell? The Simpsons told me he sucks. Like, I'm not supposed to like it.
Growing up, my dad especially, obsessed with public radio, and like the first three seasons, public television, public radio, The Simpsons constantly take
Garrison Keillor.
And I love Garrison Keillor. I'm one of the... God, everybody hates that I love Garrison Keillor.
I'd love him if he didn't sound like he was dying every time he spoke.
You don't like to hear him, like, collect his spit?
Yeah, just like... I get a sense of where his tongue is at all times, so...
An English major. but Lisa has witnessed the corruption of, what, Bob Arnold?
Yeah.
Did I get his name right? And has a brand new speech, and it's all filled with new cliches, but negative.
The city of Washington was built on a stagnant swamp some 200 years ago, and very little has changed. It stank then, and it stinks now. Only today, it is the fetid stench of corruption that hangs in the air.
Ooh, ruckus.
And who did I see taking a bribe but the Honorable Bob Arnold? Don't worry, Congressman. I'm sure you can buy all the votes you need with your dirty money. And this will be one nation under the dollar with liberty and justice for none.
Yep, there you go.
There we go, yeah.
That's reality right there.
Lisa can be just as trite as the other kids.
Yeah.
And it's having the amount of dissatisfaction and disillusionment I have with our government and its processes, I hate the ending so much. It spends the whole time being cynical.
It's a fairy tale,
I think it's like the satire equivalent of like a piano being dropped on you. Because it's like, it's not subtle. It's like, let's just do the opposite of what we think is true. And that's what and I think as a kid I took it at face value. Like, you can actually fix things. But now as an adult, I'm like, no, they're just saying like, this is what would happen in a fantasy world where someone would listen to a little girl. Yeah.
To do any of that would take 3 years.
If you listen to our previous episode, this is the second punctuation of a sentence in a great way.
Senator, there's a problem at the essay contest.
Please, son, I'm very busy.
A little girl is losing faith in democracy.
Good Lord.
That's my quote of the episode. Lord.
Yeah.
definitely.
Man, I'm saving my quote of the episode.
And that was also, we skipped over, but the first appearance of skincare consultant Rowena, who was a brief runner, I think maybe appeared like three times.
She would be at Lisa's beauty pageant, I think, too.
And the first but not last appearance of George H.W. But this, like Lisa, everybody finds out about Lisa's speech. By the time she gets down from the podium, the government has worked, has gone all the way to the president and to the newspaper.
Hey, this should make my bosses very happy.
Your bosses?
Yep. All 250 million of them.
First ever appearance from George H.W. Bush.
I want to hear that delivery of your bosses coinciding with real glasses.
She just got done with her speech. By the time she's outside and the awards have not been given yet, the newspaper has printed the results.
And in old school newsy is handing it out.
So now it is funny to me again. Yes. Yeah.
What's gotten into you?
Yeah, your other speech was a little more crowd pleasing.
I'm sorry, Dad. Couldn't think of a nice way to say America stinks.
Extra, extra, feds, nab, rotten, rab.
Give me one of those.
Imprisoned congressman becomes born again Christian.
I can't believe it. The system works.
That's
did an hour even pass?
Again,
they show the time
the
on the screen.
He's already
in
prison.
Yeah.
And like literally, this is sending shockwaves that like that congressman is repenting.
Yeah.
Congress itself will not tack a rider to add, like give bonuses to themselves.
Bonuses to themselves. Yeah. And that I love, as far as comedy goes, we saw the headline, Senator jailed. And so the first thing Marge says is converted to Christianity. I'm like, fucking beautiful. This is such a wonderful escalation. Yeah.
It is very cynical. I love it.
Wouldn't have much HW, though. He'll get replaced by season four. Mm-hmm.
But their feud was just getting started. Mm-hmm. The Asian kid won.
I love his speech.
His speech is
that
great.
Believe in him is Trong Van Din.
Trong Van Din.
I know all their names.
Punk pants.
Thank you for this oversized
say that. He won what?
The NFL punt, pass, and kick competition.
That little kid.
Essay competition.
Yeah. Essay competition. I like his line of like, where else in America?
I got it. But
oversized novelty check. I would like to share this honor with all of my fellow essayists, particularly the courageous Lisa Simpson, whose inflammatory rhetoric reminded us that the price of freedom is eternal vigilance.
Give her the check! He was serious.
And Bart apparently kills Mark Russell at the end of this episode.
But his line is like, where else but in America? Or possibly Canada.
Yeah. Truer now than it was then.
And Lisa's faith is restored, I guess.
Yeah. Though it's again another time of, I think I've heard on later commentaries, Yardley Smith would come to complain about this, that Lisa always loses. She competes in so many things, and she always loses. Mm. She never gets to win. And Yardley Smith eventually got tired of her character never winning.
Just as a personal aside, because I'm going to do my line of the show, because I took the clips. I got that one. Dave was making fun of me earlier. Recently on a podcast, I came out as someone who doesn't vote, and it doesn't believe I don't have political beliefs. I just don't like to espouse them, and I don't care if you agree with them, and I don't care if they become policy.
We know you're votophobic, Chris.
I'm votophobic. Three simple lines that emphasize everything I think about this country, for real, politically. My line of the show.
That's the joke.
Lousy, cheap country.
Yeah. Lousy, cheap country.
What was he responding to?
Not getting the check, right? Samples. Yes.
At the IRS.
And like most everything wrong with America is because it's cheap. There it is, seriously, because it doesn't want to pay for anything. Personal responsibility, so we're not going to build the road to your house. We're not going to give you internet health care. That's on you.
Fix your own bridge.
Fix your own bridge.
Every corporation gets a ton of tax breaks and welfare.
They earned it. I'm making scarecrows.
We're getting too libidous.
Again, don't want it, but that is my... That is my view of the country.
Stay tuned for talking Marxism.
We do not have mass transit because they are cheap. Why would we build things when you can buy a car and drive yourself?
You should buy a car and be part of this economy. Burn gas.
Do it. You'll love your own health insurance. Shop for it. It'll be easy.
So, yes, that was the our scathing approach of politics, as well as The Simpsons. This has been Talking Simpsons. Thanks so much for listening. I have been Bob Mackie, your host. I will continue to be Bob Mackie for as long as I live. I think I will. I will be on Twitter forever as Bob Servo. Please find me on Twitter. And I also do the classic gaming podcast Retronauts. Please find that at Retronauts.com or USGamer.net or search for Retronauts in your podcast machine. Everybody else, what do you do for a living?
In summation.
Wow, Bob Mackie.
Oh, my God. I haven't heard that.
that on every other show but this one.
I haven't heard it in months, I think.
It's my text noise whenever you
send me
text.
Yeah. Okay.
Chris like Antista. Hi, I'm Cantista on Twitter, but I don't tweet that much. Usually just to yell at you when you yell at me, which you're free to do. Because I do a show called Laser Time. We pick a pop culture topic every week and ramble on and on and on about it. I'm trying to think of something we've done recently.
Florida.
We do have Mike Drucker joining us for a Florida episode. That was
great. Pre-shame songs. The listener shame
songs. This is true. That happened recently.
And hey, I'm HENEREYG on Twitter. I rarely get to say it on here. And if I may suggest something, listen to 302010. It's our pop culture time capsule, not unlike the opening of the show where we say what happened this week in Simpsons history. 86, 96, and 2006, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, and 30 years ago, we talk about what happened that week in pop culture. It's a fun way to explore pop culture in a timely manner. Also, I host the comic book podcast, Cape Crisis. And again, let me remind you, patreon.com/lasertime, home of the first season of Talking Simpsons and our season 2 wrap-up special.
I'm at Dave Rudden on Twitter, and here's good news for Homer Simpsoy. I host the pro wrestling podcast, Cheap Podcast. Give it a listen.
That's it for us this week. Stay tuned next week for the downfall of Ned Flanders.
Later.
Wow. Infotainment.